Welcome back to another episode of City View, a podcast, Quincy podcast with Mayor Tom Koch. I'm his media director, Mark Carey. Good afternoon, Mayor.
Good afternoon, Mark.
We are finally doing it on a Wednesday, which is great. We got a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, a couple of nice days we've had, actually.
I'll take this any day.
Looks like the weekend's going to be beautiful as well. So good stuff. We're turning the corner.
Last weekend, I was in gloves. It's 36 degrees in the morning. And then, as you see, the left side of my face is completely burnt from being on the sun.
Does your face hurt, Mark?
My face? I'm not walking into that. Yeah. That was a good one. Anyway, so let's move right into the issues at hand today, because we do have a lot to talk about. I'm going to start with something that everyone received in the mail if you're a Quincy resident. We have a really great program. It's about National Grid and some new choices that we're going to have as residents in the city of Quincy. But why this happened in the first place, Mayor?
Well, there was a state law that allowed cities and towns to procure the energy supply for the community, for residents and businesses alike. And the idea is it puts everything together and you can negotiate because you get great volume and get the price down for these folks. So the city council approved us in 2018, but Department of Public Utilities has had a backlog of these, so we didn't get approved till this year. So once we got approved, we put bids out in March, and the new cycle starts in June, the billing cycle. So essentially, nothing will change physically for people. They'll still get a bill from National Grid. National Grid's the provider. National Grid fixes the lines. They charge the transmission. What we're doing is we're buying the actual electricity that will be transmitted, and we're buying it at a scale that we can provide lower rates.
Which is welcoming. And there's a couple of different rates for them that they can choose from. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, it's going to be like 5 cents less. So if somebody said to me, how much will I save in a year? It could be hundreds of dollars in energy savings. So it's a good thing. Now, people don't have to stay with this. If they want to opt out, they can do that. But certainly, you know, I think it's a good deal for people, and it's worked pretty well in other communities. So I think we get the locked-in rates till the end of 27. Part of our energy procurement is green energy, I think 10% more than what's required by law. So there are some plans that people will have. But there's been one notice already out. There'll be more notices coming. There'll be meetings on it. There'll be stuff on social media.
So we'll walk a video on it. Yeah,
and we'll walk everybody through it. But it's I can tell people it's a good deal. You're going to save money on your electricity, and I think it's a good thing. In fact, the meeting is we've got a community meeting for, April 23rd at 6 p.m. at the Kennedy Center on East Quantum Street. If people want to come out to that, but there will be mailings. There'll be other ways to connect with us on if you have any questions. So it's a good program. I think it's going to be well received once people understand it.
And just Mr. Walker had filled this in a little bit on your staff. There'll be options for people. Basically, you can take the complete, just take a cut. You can also choose to go sort of a little bit more green and keep the energy that's coming, or you can go really green, which it may actually cost a little bit more, but it's up to you and your choice. So there'll be different options.
Yeah, there's a standard plan, a basic plan, a premium plan, and then there's an option you can opt out completely. So, yeah, the standard plan is 10% green energy, which is essentially conforms with the law. And then if you want to go to a much bigger or 100% green energy, you can check that box, but you're going to pay more money for your power. This essentially, from my perspective, is saving money for consumers when we're having a very difficult time with inflation right now. So I think the timing is good for people.
I agree. So we'll talk more about that, folks. Please pay attention to the City of Quincy Facebook page. If you're not on Facebook, you can see we'll be doing a couple of videos in this. We also have a YouTube page, City of Quincy, Instagram, Twitter. We're on all of the social media outlets. Make sure you visit the City of Quincy official pages. Also, the Quincy website at quincyma.gov.
Quincyma.gov. That's good.
Now, let's shift gears and talk about some pretty big things that just happened over the week, this week. Some things that ended up before the city council.
We have a five-year rolling plan, and we update it periodically, more frequently than every 5 years, yes.
Right. And this time around, we're going to talk about equipment. We're going to talk about
Shifting gears, so we're going to talk about equipment.
Yeah, shifting gears. Never drove a truck. Yeah. I did shift. I learned on a standard first. That was my first time.
Right. So you get it.
Equipment, public buildings, and some land acquisition stuff. So let's start with equipment.
Sure. Well, as folks generally know, we're a big city. We've got departments that serve the people of the city. Fire department, we just recently did a separate bid on that, buying a new ladder truck and two new engines that won't be in for 3 or 4 years. That's why we got to get out in front of it and plan for it ahead of time. That one has already been dealt with. This one will include a number of pieces of equipment for the Department of Public Works, Department of Natural Resources, Police Department, and Information Technology. Well, for example, we have sweepers that go out every night. We're going to be replacing one of our Pelican sweepers. That's a $290,000 piece of equipment. We're replacing some of our Mack dump trucks, some of the utility trucks, all of those pieces of equipment you see on the road that are servicing, whether it's sewer, water, DPW side, highway side, and then, of course, the Department of Natural Resources, we're including two backhoes along with four F-250 pickup trucks. And then there's other stuff sprinkled in, you know, new recycling containers and stuff that we got to upgrade. And we've got a pedestrian bridge, kind of falls in no man's land. If you're coming in Newport Avenue extension off in the Ponce Bridge, there's a little overpass above that needs work. It's pedestrian that connects the neighborhoods. So there's in there. That's in there from some improvements. I think structurally it's fine, but it needs to be upgraded. And then we've got TPL, Department of Parking and Lighting, traffic parking and lighting. And we've got some design questions about Four of a Circle that's not working very well. When the new bridge is put in, they're coming off that bridge at high rates of speed and they're hitting that rotary and flipping over. It's been a real challenge. So Ed Grennan and Allie looking at some upgrades to see how we can mitigate that, slow people down, and perhaps put some barriers in that will absorb the hit rather than crashing the curb, things like that. They also have some equipment needs, you know, fleet vehicles, and there's citywide smart signal expansion. People might have seen those around intersections that are, they have cameras on them so they can manipulate the intersection right from the computer at the office, and it's the latest and greatest in IT. And then, of course, streetlight repair and enhancement. And then you go to the police department. We need some new radios and a couple of new engines for our police boats, evidence processing system, things you would never think about, you know. Ballistic vests with some bulletproof vests for the officers, things like that, cameras. We've got some new police cruisers in there as well. So, and then, of course, technology department, informational technology. We have two new vehicles. They go around and service all the city buildings, so they need the vehicles to do that. And I think there's a new, some kind of a switch. I'm getting beyond my skis here about IT. So, but, you know, that's essentially the equipment portion. So when we do these projects on the capital, they're broken into equipment, into building improvements, into land acquisition. And again, depending on the funding source, how it's baked. For example, part of this program had some money in there for land acquisition coming from the hotel tax.
Well, all part of the job for you, and all part of the managing of all of these departments, not just taking care of the public buildings, but all the equipment that goes with it. So let's talk about public buildings.
Sure.
Talk about some of the upgrades and improvements for capital improvement for the buildings, public buildings.
Yeah, so we continue to work on firehouses. You know, most of the firehouses are very old and need a lot of upgrades, and we've been chipping away at it, as we've had with the schools. So there's money in here for Engine 2, Engine 6, Point Webster Engine 3, window replacements, Germantown Engine 8, shower room improvements. And that's part of our cancer mitigation program we introduced. Firefighters have a higher rate of cancer, and some of the programs that we've looked to mitigate that is, for example, when they go out in a fire, they come back, they literally throw all of their stuff into the washer and dryer, get in, shower, and put in a new set of gear. The old days, you come back from a fire, you're sitting in that gear for your whole shift, so your skin is absorbing all those chemicals and cancer agents that would be in there. You know, you think about you're in a firefighter, you're in fighting a fire, you're perspiring, your pores open up, so you're absorbing all those things that aren't good for you that can lead to cancer. So some of these improvements in the firehouses have helped to mitigate some of those challenges they face. We've got asbestos abatements, various buildings all across the city. And we've been doing that over the years as we do improvements. That could be in ceiling tiles, it could be in pipe coverings, could be in tiles in the floors and hallways of schools. I mean, it's not a problem until it becomes a problem. But if you're going to do in renovations or anything, then asbestos is an issue if it becomes airborne. You know, when it's in the tile, it's not an issue. I don't think any kids are chewing on the floor tiles. I certainly hope not.
But you know, grew up in my house.
you get unit ventilators, domestic hot water, elevator upgrades, oil tank removal, flooring, carpeting, ceilings, lighting, ADA upgrades with lifts and bathroom modifications. Lincoln Hancock, our community pool, that needs some mechanical designs and improvements. I mean, I could go on and on. You get the point. I mean, it's magnified a millionfold from your house, right? So you get those challenges in the house, just multiply that by a certain number, and that's what we have when you go across the city. Two special projects in here would be the design for a new auditorium at North Quincy High School and a design for a new auditorium at Atlantic Middle School. Those are the last two that really need some major upgrade, and we've got a very good program in our schools with the drama programs, the music programs, and these spaces get used really beautifully. So there's a lot in there, and that's all under the and some additional money in the animal shelter that we're building up on Quarry Street, just as we've dealt with over the last few years. The challenges with costs, I had a board meeting today with the Mass Department of Transportation, and the cost for everything in the last several years has really driven the supply shortages on things and the cost of labor. Everything is up. We see the inflation. Everything is up. So you know, there's additional money in there so we can get the animal shelter finished. There's some more money in there for Kennedy Center. We're doing structural repairs of that building, and we began that project earlier last year, I think in the fall.
Yeah.
And that's ongoing, but we found more damage that they're going to fix, so a little bit more money in there for that. So that it covers a lot of ground.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of buildings.
There's 80-plus buildings that you have to manage and constantly keep upkeep. And some of these buildings are over 100 years old, right? I mean, that's just
correct.
Goes on and on and on.
That's correct.
So, yeah. Well, that's part of the process and part of the problem. But it's good to let people know what's going on, why that all went before the council. And the council saw it in their infinite wisdom to see these fixes through. Let's talk about land acquisition.
Sure. So we do that from time to time when something makes sense, when something goes up for sale. And, for example, down Cleverly Court in Quincy Point, down to the shipyard, we built a couple of new fields a number of years ago. One is named for Joy Hanlon, a young girl who died as a youngster from an accident, and Malcolm McNeil, who ran Quincy soccer for years. So there's a field there. One's McNeil, one's Hanlon. They're together. Around that area, we built a lot of new housing, the Watson, some other places. You got the shipyard, heavy industrial use. There's not a lot of open space in playground area. So this is going to allow us to buy the car wash that abuts the Cleverly Court field. Then we'll knock the car wash down. We'll add to the fields and add parking for the facility. Additionally, we're negotiating. We're working on getting the piece of land on the other side of Cleverly Court that's owned by the MWRA that we're going to turn into some green space. So that'll be a really shot in the arm, a really lift for that neighborhood. Kids be able to go to a place that's safe and clean and have some nice play equipment and so forth. So that's an important one. So the acquisition piece, I think we're using hotel tax money for that. And then, of course, demolition cost of and getting the site in order. Those are big projects for certain neighborhoods. You know, we over the years, we've done acquisition, and it's always makes sense. Anything, I'm always watching if there's a piece of property that abuts like this, a park or a school that makes sense to grab it to help us with the campus around the school or the park itself. It makes sense to do it at that point. If you're doing it just ad lib going around the city, it becomes very adversarial with people that don't want to sell. But if something's up in the market, you know, and we could move on it and it makes sense for the city to have it, then that's the time to do it. Everything is timing, you know. We've done that. As you know, we made a major project with the Creedon Field in North Quincy. We purchased 9 homes. We purchased a couple of homes in the Maritime Center area in Howes Neck. You know, I know some people say, oh, you're building too much. Well, we try to balance things. We build things in the right place, the right density, and then you balance it with some additional open space where we can. So,
and that's a fantastic project, the Creedon project out there. That's just
beautiful. Yeah, but it was great for the school. I mean, that should have been done when the school was done in the late 70s, honestly. Those houses were literally on top of the sidewalk. The traffic was a mess. There was not much room on that campus of the high school. It was basically used for all parking. So I think it made some sense and it balanced. You know, you got Quincy High, which has a beautiful track facility and Faxon Field next door. And they're down the street from Marymount Park. You know, North now has kind of a place where they can get out and practice and use for phys ed. And so it's good. It's really good stuff. And it adds overall to the facilities of a park system. So it's not just for school use, but we've got youth organizations as well that kids in our city that use it for sports. So it makes sense to do those projects from time to time. They're bold projects. Some people don't want to touch them because they're too big, they're too expensive. But for quality of life for the city, they make perfect sense.
Well, and as other cities and towns, I know I've heard this, but other cities and towns are envious of the things that we're able to do. We're able to take care of the buildings that we have, take care of that land acquisition that needs to be done, the equipment that needs to be replaced. We can do that.
Well, it's a combination of things, right? So, as I've always said, this city has good bones in so many different ways, and we've been fortunate for where we live, you know, location, location, location. So the land here is valuable. We've done, I think, we, and I say we, members of the city council, state delegation, departments, employees. We've done a real good job really upgrading our city in so many different ways, whether it's the park improvements that you alluded to, that parks in the city are second to none. The work that's gone on, we're in our fifth new school, as you know, Squantum School, and the upgrades to all the other school buildings. These are all public assets, the capital assets that are owned by the public, and it's our job to maintain them, not to put things off and put things off like it was done for a long, long time. So, yeah, people pay for this. Taxes in Quincy aren't the cheapest in the state, and they're not the most expensive. But I've always argued if you show the people what you're doing with their money, they'll be supportive, and I think that's been the case. You're seeing what you get for your dollars. We're building roads. We're building seawalls. We're building schools. We're rebuilding parks. You know, just the North Quincy Library is completely renovated. I mean, there's a number of projects that we've been working on, and the list is endless. So, you know, it's not like you ever finish. You're on to the next one. You're on to the next one. And we've been able to do that by managing our finances, getting good rates on our bonding over the years. So it's a team effort, and I'm grateful for everybody involved. And I'm grateful for the council and deliberation the other night, and they're thinking of the wisdom and what we're doing. It makes perfect sense. You know, when the bond people look at your budget, they don't just look at what you're spending. They look at what you're not spending. They not only look at your revenue, but they look at your assets. If you're not maintaining your assets, that's a knock on your rating. It's not just about put money in the bank and borrow later. No, they look at the entire portfolio, the entire picture. So we have a good, solid, excellent bond rating. And some of that is because of the work we've been doing to the assets to maintain them. So it comes full circle. It makes good sense. And I know there's a special project that was also included in this.
Well, I was going to bring that up for the last thing. We've done, this city has been, and thanks to you and thanks to many, we're a city that's so proud of our veterans and so proud of the work, of the celebrations that we've had for our veterans, including the General's Park and the General's Bridge and the World War II Memorial and the Korean Memorial. It goes on and on. We have so many great things. But one thing I know that's near and dear to your heart, too, that you've been really working on diligently, I know this is one of your pet projects, but this is a very exciting project that's happening, the Lone Sailor Park. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, after the General's Bridge project was finished and we honored some incredible, incredible American patriots, a couple of brothers came to see me, Bob and Ted Nazer, both of them Navy veterans, and said, hey, what about the sailors, you know? So unfortunately, Bob passed away a few years ago. He lived at Marina Bay. His brother Ted Nazer, who I think is 95 or 96, he's still with us, and called him on his birthday a couple of months ago to check in. So they came to me with the proposal, hey, how about a lone sailor statue for Quincy? This would be the 19th one around the world. The first one was done at the Navy Memorial in D.C. And this city has, as you alluded to, an incredible record of service in the military. But in addition to the military, we also have an incredible history of building ships for the war effort. So we really gave it a good look, come up with a nice design to do several things, Mark. One is, the lone sailor statue will be the centerpiece of this park at Marina Bay. And obviously the statue represents all of those folks in the sea services and in the Navy, and, you know, the Marines is technically with the
Navy.
We're
in Marina Bay, by the way. We're in Marina Bay.
So it's at the corner of 4305 and Cerros. It was a pocket park there. We purchased the little building that the former Blue used to be in, open it up a little bit more. And why this makes perfect sense, Mark, is at one time, exactly on this location, there was the Victory Plant that built destroyers for World War I. Second piece is, as you know, in World War II, this area was a naval air station that was served the nation, training pilots for the war effort. So, so in addition to honoring the sailors, it's also honoring shipbuilding. It's also honoring the naval air station. As I mentioned, the lone sailor statue will be in the center. We have chosen to honor a number of individuals as part of this. We have six admirals from Quincy that will be honored. Two of them are still with us. A number of them have gone home to the Lord many years ago, but we've got Vice Admiral Colin James Kilrain, who just retired last spring, and Rear Admiral Stephen Keith, Vice Admiral John Reddy, Rear Admirals Giles Chester Stedman, Rear Admiral Bartholomew William Hogan, Rear Admiral Forrest Benton Royal. Pretty amazing. So we have the list of generals, we have a list of admirals. And then in addition, we felt we should do some other notables, people that served in the Navy in a different way, and when they came back, they continued to serve in some fashion. There could be hundreds that we could pick from, Mark, honestly, but we did pick Captain Richard Stratton, whose story has been told a number of times, but
amazing,
a true American hero, flyer in Vietnam, was in a POW for 6.5 years, and he came back and continued to serve, and he became a social worker and help people get through their challenges and troubled times, but an incredible patriot. Henry Bosworth, he served in the Navy on a ship that I think had 11 battle stars, 10 of them in World War II.
Amazing.
Henry came back and he had a dream of starting a community newspaper. He started the Quincy Sun in the late 60s, which has been an incredible paper, community paper for the community.
It's in its name.
So terrific. Francis X. Bilotti, one of the first frogmen. You know, he was lieutenant governor. He ran for governor, was unsuccessful, then ran for attorney general, and he became the premier attorney general around the country back in the 80s. A remarkable individual. And he's going to be 101 next month.
I know.
I saw him recently at the Delahunt funeral in Wake. Bill Delahunt was a good, good friend of Frank's, so they used to jog together. Then we have Charles Francis Adams. He was mayor of Quincy. Then he went on to become Secretary of the Navy under President Hoover, which was a cabinet position at that time. And the other one is we're just visiting Mildred Cox. Millie had her 100th birthday just 2 weeks ago. We went over there to celebrate at River Bay. She's a remarkable individual. She was one of the first female Marines that served during World War II. So, again, we could pick dozens of others that would be fall in this category, but we felt these kind of rose to the top. These folks will be honored that day. We're also going to be having in the park the bell from the USS Quincy, the second USS Quincy. The first one was sunk in the Battle of Savo Islands, August 9, 1942. A replacement was built at Quincy Fort River Shipyard, and when that was decommissioned, we got the bell from that. It used to be in front of City Hall. It will now have a prominent spot, perfectly located in this. It'll tell the story of the Quincy, but also, and we're going to have a portable clapper on it, Mark, so that for special occasions, we could put the clapper on, ring the bell. The concern was if we left it on permanently, the people coming out of the water club may be ringing that bell looking for their Ubers. It might not be a good thing for the residents. So
good move.
And then, of course, we'll have a wall where the blue was. That's going to have a number of panels that will talk about what was there, the shipbuilding, naval air station, some individuals that flew out of there. Some images of some of the famous ships that were built at Fort River. So this is, we're trying to be really all-inclusive about the war effort over the years. It's not just about those on the front lines. It's those that supported the effort right through. And you think about the men that wanted to serve, they couldn't serve, but worked at the shipyard building those vessels that were just as important to the war effort. So we're trying to honor all of that service in one, and I think it's going to be great.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear about that. My dad was in the Navy. You know, he'd love that. But at the same time, I heard Kilrain on there. Kilrain was there. I wonder if he's related to the boxer, the famous boxer.
I believe he is. I don't know the exact connection, Mark, but I'm pretty sure he is.
So the famous boxer, Jay Kilrain, who's buried at St. Mary's Cemetery,
yep,
who was a heavyweight champion. He's in the International Boxing Hall of Fame. He fought John L. Sullivan 75 rounds in 1879.
Bare knuckle
in Mississippi at 102 degrees. That's an amazing story. We'll talk about that another time, but probably related. You know, finally to close here, Congressman Bill Delahunt, what a loss. And we haven't talked about that. And I know we don't usually get into that here on this, but when somebody of such prominence and such an incredible human being, he was a good friend of mine. I know he's a great friend of yours and loved the whole family. Karen,
yeah, my dad supported him in his first race in Ward 5. He started as a Ward 5 counselor and then ran for state rep. He won the state rep seat. Judge Burke resigned as a district attorney for Norfolk County, and Governor Dukakis appointed Bill Delahunt to that seat. He did remarkable work as the DA. I mean, he was so far ahead of his time. That's when the DA offices started to become full-time, and he really focused on the domestic violence issue along with a number of other people, but they were way ahead of their time across the country. It was featured on 60 Minutes and national magazines, what they did for protection of women, domestic violence, and all that goes with it, unfortunately. He certainly was a pioneer in that whole world. Mm-hmm. And then he ran for Congress after Gary Studs left, ran, was successful. After a recount, Phil Johnston, he was successful and became a terrific advocate for for people, and certainly of this district, paid attention to things. He was one of the few guys or few Congress folks that voted against the war in Iraq. He struggled with that one and articulated the reasons.
Crossed the aisle many
times. He was revered in that he could work with all sides. It wasn't this polarization that we see today. And I would say Steve Lynch is in the same category, but unfortunately, most of them aren't. We see Congress that's so divided today, so polarized. That's the complete opposite of what Bill Dalhunt was all about. You know, we talked about his work in the newspaper about the adoptions and becoming citizens, those that were adopted. I mean, I could go on and on about his work in D.C., his tourism work for when the district at that time was Quincy, went down through the Cape along the coastline.
Yep.
And certainly over the years was a mentor to me. He was a great advisor. You could bounce off things off of Bill, and he'd give you good advice. There's times he'd reach out to me when I didn't ask him for his advice, but he was glad to give it.
I love it.
Saw me perhaps in a misstep or something, suggesting a certain way to deal with things. And just a good guy. I mean, he was fun to be around, and he loved his city of Quincy.
He
never left Quincy. I mean, this was his city, just like we consider it's our city, for all the right reasons. And he's going to be missed, sorely missed for a long time. Again, I express my deepest sympathy to Julie, to his daughters Kara and Kirsten, and his former wife Katie. Great, great people. And again, it's a loss, but how lucky we were to have him for all those years.
Wonderful family, wonderful man. God bless the whole family, and thought it was worthy of bringing him up
for
the end. So we'll see you next time on City View with Mayor Tom Koch. Catch you later.
Bye-bye.